At a million other choices, we discuss some dark and troubling topics. If dark and troubling is not your thing, mine might not be the right podcast for you. If you like your dark topics discussed without pesky ads and are looking for some additional content from me, you can sign up for the exclusive feed. The link should be in the show notes, and if not, you can find me on redcircle.com. I research each case myself, and I do my best to use a wide variety of sources, preferably directly from court documents when they're available, to ensure that the information is as accurate as possible. But I cannot verify the truth of all reporting that is publicly available. So this episode has been produced for information and entertainment purposes only and should be taken as such. And with all my legal and publicity stuff out of the way, let's listen to what words I will inadvertently mispronounce today.
And I know the answer to the question that everyone keeps asking. I know why you did this. You did this simply because you were not in a cage.
But was she dead on the day I arrived? Or...
She was dead when you killed her.
I agree with the family. I hope you die in prison as well.
It disgusts me that you are allowed to exist.
Case that I have for you today, we are back in Canada today for, and it's one that's going to make you furious for a number of reasons. This is the murder of Nadine Scow. Nadine Scow, daughter to Helen and Harvey, grew up along with her brother in Lethbridge. She was outspoken. She was larger than life. She worked as a dedicated youth worker and then moved to Edmonton to work at the Chemo Youth Retreat Center and also for the Catholic Social Services. You would be hard-pressed to find anybody that would have a negative word to say about Nadine. She was described by absolutely everyone who knew her as just an absolutely great person who she was adored by her friends. She adored her friends, her family, her coworkers, the kids that she worked with. She had a particularly close relationship with her dad, Harvey, who always called her his girl, his sweetheart. She was super outgoing, a total social butterfly. So she was 38 years old in 2015 and had been single for about a year after her last breakup and was looking very forward to moving out of her kind of loud rental unit in a neighborhood that was a little bit troubled by some crime, which is located at 10650 104th Street. She was going to be moving into her very own condo near the big football stadium. Now, Nadine had to work the weekend of August 23rd and on a camping trip with the kids that she worked with, but she was packed and ready to go. Like, she was moving out. The moving truck had been arranged, new furniture was purchased, and it was all set to be delivered at her new place. She had her paint chips picked out to completely just redecorate and deck out her new place. Her current apartment wasn't terrible to her. I mean, it was okay. It was close to downtown, and she had kind of recently locked herself out, and so she had new locks on the door that were pretty secure. And of course, Nadine had been trained in self-defense because of the nature of her work that she did, so she could take care of herself. But the building was one of those three-story brick buildings with probably about 4 to 6 apartments on each floor. And the rest of the street was sort of dotted on both sides with two-story Victorian-style homes. Some were in good condition. Some were a little bit run-down looking. It was just a well-used, homey neighborhood, but one that had its issues with drugs and some petty thefts, vandalism, that kind of thing. But the idea and now reality of owning her own condo was something that she couldn't have been more proud about. She was just really looking forward to it. She was also very much looking forward to driving out to Beaumont to her parents' place, which is about a 40-minute drive south of her place in Edmonton, where she could finally set her eyes on her brand new niece that had just been born to her brother and his wife just 3 months before. She hadn't yet been able to see and smell and just cuddle and all the things that we like to do with newborn babies just yet. Nadine had gotten home from her camping trip on, I believe, on the Saturday night, and then she changed her profile picture on Facebook to a selfie of her on this camping trip, complete with like a wool hat or a toque is what we call it. It hadn't been a particularly warm weekend for camping, even though it was still August, but she had caught a case of the sniffles on the trip, so she didn't think it was a really good idea to travel to see a newborn. So she sent a text to her mom on the Sunday letting her know that she was disappointed and to make sure that she took some pictures and sent her some pictures. And her mom texted back and forth during the evening, as was completely usual and normal for them. Now, I believe the timeline was that Monday and Tuesday, Nadine had to work, and then Wednesday was moving day. And Nadine was a lady that she phoned her parents like all the time. In fact, her mom used to kind of joke that, oh, you know, we're just sitting down to eat. Nadine's probably going to phone. She called first thing in the morning to like sort of check in on her parents, and then several times throughout the day. It was like clockwork with her, like without fail. On the Monday morning, so the 24th of August, Helen and Harvey, they didn't get their usual wake-up call from Nadine. Now, they didn't know that she had also not shown up for work that day and had not called ahead of time to let them know. So Helen and Harvey were internally alarmed that they hadn't heard from Nadine that morning, but she had said that she had been under the weather, so, you know, perhaps she just decided to sleep in. The next morning, the Tuesday, after almost 24 hours of not hearing a word from her at all and her not answering her phone, Harvey phoned her work and discovered that she had not come into that she had not shown up for work for 2 days in a row, which was really unlike her. So Harvey asked one or two of her coworkers to go to her place, check on her, and then report back to him. But he couldn't wait for them to get like to report back to him. So what he needed to do was get in his car and make the drive from Beaumont to her apartment himself. And on the way there, like, thoughts would just not get out of Harvey's mind that something was really, really wrong here. And so he turned on the radio to try and kind of drown the thoughts out. But instead of like any kind of uplifting music, it was interrupted by a news broadcast that a body of a woman had been found on 104th Street in Edmonton. So Harvey pulled over the car and opened his door and then vomited onto the side of the highway. So he closed the door, carried on to Nadine's apartment. He just knew that it was her that had been found.
I was on my way up to her apartment, and I just turned off 95th Street onto 107th Avenue, and I heard in the radio there was a homicide, and there was 106th and 104th, and it was all closed off, and I had to pull over and puke. I just knew.
Now, Helen had been concerned, but she felt that it had to have something to do with her being under the weather. Quote, I would never have dreamed in my wildest dreams it would be this. You hear about it, but you never think it would happen in your family.
We would not let the police tell us the details because apparently it was very gruesome. Just terrible. Terrible.
And what exactly was this that had happened to Nadine? Well, what I can tell you is that Staff Sergeant Bill Clark of the Edmonton Police said it was one of the most horrific crime scenes that he had encountered on his in his 20 years on the force.
The scene is probably one of the most horrific I've seen in my career as a police officer, and I've been to hundreds, probably a few hundred murder scenes. And thus the charge of indignity to a human body. I won't be able to obviously comment on exactly what was done, but I think that it's, unfortunately, it's going to be very shocking.
Now, Nadine, a woman like described as smart and ambitious, who would literally stop whatever she was doing to help someone with whatever they needed, whenever they needed it.
She loved to watch movies. But she was
like
very,
she worked so much. She was pretty much a homebody.
Yeah. But she always kept in touch with family and friends.
Yeah. She was just my sweetheart, you know. my eyes, she could do no wrong.
She had been stabbed 101 times. But wait, it gets worse. The autopsy took about 4 times as long as a normal autopsy. Now, why was that? Well, because 5 of her organs, including her uterus and ovaries, had been removed from her body, and her heart, as in the organ, her heart, had been stabbed through it with a knife, pinning it to a wall in her apartment. Like, not since the days of Jack the Ripper and, like, serial killers, I have yet to hear that kind of rage, that it would take someone to do that to another person. And Nadine was about as well-liked as a person could get without, like, being Oprah Winfrey herself. So finding a motive was not going to be easy. Now, after her discovery, the Lethbridge YMCA described her on their Facebook page as a kind, gentle, and fun-loving, and encouraged us all to speak her name, show honor to Nadine by working to make our world a better place, a peaceful place where all women are safe. Well, I don't believe that a motive per se was ever really found for Nadine's, like, really most vicious and brutal of murders. But what police did find will probably leave you wondering what planet we are living on, because her neighbor, one Brooke, with a last name that I will be so kind as to not say out loud, who lived with her boyfriend, well, on the night of the 24th of August, she was asleep. And that's fine, she's allowed to be asleep. But she was woken up by hearing footsteps in her living room, like, so completely freaked out. She's allowed to be. She tiptoed out of the bedroom to see a man. Now, she didn't get a good look at him, but she screamed and grabbed her umbrella and chased him out of the apartment. So, like, good for her for standing up for herself. So, what did she do then? Well, she watched the man go down the hallway and enter Nadine's apartment, where a barrage of horrible and terrible, terrifying sounds emanated for what seemed like a very long time. So Brooke and her boyfriend, who did not get his name called out in the local paper, listened to this horror show going on next door for a while. And then when most of the noises had kind of died down, she walked stealthily down the hall and put her ear to the door. And, like, what she heard was what she says is, quote, "It was a little bit of moaning, like her last breaths or something. It was like she wasn't screaming anymore. It was like she was dying," end quote. Like, that's horrible. So why did it take the police so long to get there? Well, that's because neither she nor any of her neighbors or her boyfriend ever called the police. Not even to report the intruder in her own home that she was brave enough to confront with an umbrella. Not even to report that her neighbor had been making these horrible, like, dying sounds, and that she hadn't been seen coming or going from her apartment since that night. Nobody ever called the police to raise the alarm. So I'll just give you a second to let that kind of sink in. So a guy breaks into your house in the middle of the night, scares the holy bejesus out of you. You manage to scare him off with an umbrella. You watch him wander off and into another apartment, and then hear the sounds that you yourself describe as, like, last breaths and dying sounds. And not once do you think that maybe, just maybe, to call the police. Not confront the guy. I mean, not to go, like, ninja and risk your own life, but creep back into your apartment and make a phone call that takes a few seconds. Like, a few seconds. And if it turns out to be nothing, well, what harm would have been done by that? On what planet would a 911 operator tell you to go bonk yourself for calling about an intruder who you watched go into someone else's apartment, like, all calm? Like, clearly this guy knew he was in the right neighborhood to commit one of the most heinous crimes that I have ever heard in my life, where nobody would disturb him. Like, even question his existence there. Like, I give my head a shake. When you hear something, or see something, please just say something. It's a phone call, for crying out loud. Not even long distance. It doesn't use up any of your minutes or your data on your cell phone. Anyways, if that part wasn't aggravating enough, well, there's more. Now, fortunately, it didn't take days of sleuthing and trying to figure shit out here, because 38-year-old Silva Coshwell walked into a police station that day to let them know that he had been the one that did the deed and that he had left enough DNA and evidence behind tying himself to know beyond any reasonable or even unreasonable doubt that he had been the one that had murdered Nadine. Now, who is this asshat? Well, believe it or not, which I think Helen and Harvey even had a very hard time believing it, Silva had been Nadine's ex-boyfriend and common law partner that she had broken up with amicably over a year before. And they had lived together for a little while, and they split up. Everything seemed very friendly. They split their stuff up 50-50 and just kind of went their separate ways. Or at least it seemed that way. The problem is, we have no idea if Silva and Nadine actually kept in contact after that or what the whole deal was, because after admitting to being her murderer, he said absolutely nothing else. Like, as in, gave no reason why, what had prompted it, why he had been so angry that he cut out her organs and stabbed them through a wall. There was no statement, just nothing. Didn't even lie about why.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
What if I told you this holiday season you can stuff your face with tasty, craveable snacks and, wait for it, feel great? Hi, I'm Will, founder of IQBar, the only plant protein bar formulated for your body and your brain. IQBar's brain-boosting nutrients are designed to refuel, nourish, and satisfy hunger with zero sugar crash. Featuring delicious holiday flavors like gingerbread, IQBars are the less than 200-calorie snack that satisfies your sweet tooth and your protein goals. Right now, take 25% off all IQBar products and get free shipping. Also, check out our other limited edition holiday flavors like peppermint mocha jitter-free IQ Joe coffee. Clean ingredients, fantastic taste, and zero regrets. 'Tis the season to refuel smarter, hydrate harder, and caffeinate larger with IQBar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code AUDIO to get 25% off all IQBar products plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code AUDIO.
So who is this Silva Koshman character? Because he's clearly a serial killer or something. It turns out he's just a regular, disgusting kind of pig of sorts. Now, before I go on about Silva, I just want to reiterate what the police said about Nadine. Quote, "Definitely our victim had no issues with drugs or anything like that. By all accounts, was just a great lady, had a great job, and everybody liked her." And actually, before I tell you about Silva and his complete malfunction, I want to tell you about this memorial service that was held for Nadine. It was held at a church in South Edmonton, and it was attended by literally hundreds of people. Like, you couldn't find anyone that did not like Nadine. The youth that she worked with were there, all of her family, her many, many, many friends. Her best friend from childhood, Maxine McLeod, gave her eulogy. It was just heavy and heartbreaking. Like, it was just a heavy and heartbreaking day for everyone there. It was standing room only. People were standing in the aisles of the church between the pews. They were gathered outside the door just trying to hear. She just had such a big heart and was so loved that people were just shocked and saddened by how unnecessary her death had been. Like, so meaningless. And, like, why? But Jamie Morton, who's Nadine's cousin, well, she had some words to say. She just couldn't get over how someone who had dedicated her life to helping others when she really needed it died alone and no one helped her. She said, quote, "A 10-second phone call and everything could have been different. People should be outraged that this happened to somebody. Nobody gave her a voice when she needed it the most." End quote. Yes, like, hear, hear. That's the part that I think makes me so frustrated. Well, the whole thing just makes me furious. And now, another person at her funeral was a 16-year-old that Nadine had helped through some depression and stuff that he was going through. And he wanted to make sure that Nadine wasn't just remembered for how brutally and disgustingly her life had ended, but for what her life had been like and the difference that she made for others. Quote, I just hope she can be remembered by everybody for the good things. And I really hope so too. It's really difficult when somebody's murdered in such a brutal fashion to not, you know, remember them as sort of the person that had their heart pinned to a wall. But Nadine's life was so much more than that. Like, she was just really a great and really genuine person that the world was really better off for having her in it. But not so for Silva. So after his arrest, the police issued a statement that read in part, he hasn't been cooperative since he was arrested last night, hasn't provided any type of statement to us. However, we have enough evidence to charge him with murder. I would put this case up to a case of domestic violence. She was an unfortunate victim who met an individual who, for whatever reason, did this to her. I mean, these types of situations where it's almost a domestic type, there was probably a little bit of jealousy or possibly, I would say in this case, some type of rage involved, end quote. Now, so it's believed that Silva had come to the apartment building that Sunday, late in the Sunday night or kind of early the Monday morning, and gone into the wrong apartment at first. That would be Brooke's place, before then going into Nadine's. Now, as for Brooke and why in God's name she didn't bother to call the police, they said, quote, she felt bad. I really couldn't explain to you why she didn't call the police. They lived in this building. They heard a lot of things, and I hate to say it, but they almost get used to it. So they feel they don't want to bother us, and we need to change that mindset. You want to bother the police. Make the call and let us make that determination, end quote. Now, I think at this point, it's a good time to mention that this rage fest and frenzy of stabbing and disemboweling that Nadine had endured is estimated by the medical examiner to have lasted up to 3 hours. And the majority of the stab wounds were inflicted while she was still alive. So as the justice would later say, it was a gruesome and horrifying incident from start to finish. The savagery displayed by Mr. Koshwell is beyond comprehension, end quote. So Silva Koshwell had originally been born in the area today known as South Sudan, but had come to Canada in 1997 as a landed immigrant on a family sponsorship. So he had other family here at the time. Now, I am Canadian. I love the fact that Canada is made up of people from all countries that are out there. We have, and we embrace immigration. So there's no political statement on my part regarding immigration in general. And quite frankly, Silva had been living here for 22 years by the time he murdered Nadine. So I don't have a problem with letting him into the country. He was only 21 years old at the time, and Sudan was going through some terrible stuff themselves, which I'm going to get to the part that I have the issue with. Silva pled not criminally responsible, or basically not guilty by reason of insanity, as they say. So this was in August of 2019, after being in jail for 4 years awaiting his trial on this matter. And he did admit to stabbing Nadine over 100 times and cutting out some of her organs. But his defense lawyer, Peter Royal, said that he wasn't criminally responsible because he had PTSD from the civil war in Sudan and that he was in a psychotic state at the time. And to be fair, civil war in Sudan did kill, displaced millions of people over a number of decades. And there were all kinds of horrific things happening. And it was a terrible place to have to experience your childhood. Like, there's no doubt about that. But Silva says he remembers seeing bodies, hearing screams almost nightly as a kid, and that he had to be suffering from some kind of mental disorder because, like, just look at what he did, right? Like the viciousness of it and then turning himself in, like, clearly he was insane. And they did get a forensic psychologist named Leslie Block to testify that he was likely having flashbacks from childhood traumas and was clearly in a psychotic state at the time. But the Crown had another psychologist, Roger Brown, who said that, he had depression and some symptoms of PTSD, but there wasn't any evidence at all of psychosis, and that any kind of mental disorder he was having was more likely due to his use, or rather overuse, abuse, if you will, of alcohol and crack cocaine that he had been doing rather frequently in the days and weeks leading up to the murder. And the Crown prosecutor, Lori Trahan, further theorized that Silva had gone into a jealous rage when he learned that Nadine was moving and hadn't told him where she was moving. In the end, Justice Sterling Sanderman said that Leslie's assessment of Silva having all this childhood trauma was theoretical construct, not supported by evidence, and was speculative at best, but misleading at worst. And that Peter Royals, whose, you know, argument that the very violence of the attack on Nadine showed insanity was wrong, and that the trauma that he was exposed to as a child was actually an example that humans are capable of committing unimaginable atrocities.
August 24th, 2015. Now, the issue at hand is whether 42-year-old Silva Coshwell was not criminally responsible for his actions. Now, earlier this week in court, he admitted to stabbing his ex-girlfriend 101 times, mutilating her body, stabbing her even after she had died, and removing some of her organs. Now, the defense argued NCR not criminally responsible based on Coshwell's past. He grew up in South Sudan and witnessed militia raids, resulting, according to a defense expert witness, in PTSD and a disconnection from the reality of his actions. So the judge had to weigh that evidence, as well as take into consideration the expert testimony from the Crown, from one of their witnesses. The judge noted that in examinations with both witnesses, Coshwell did not offer details about himself and his state of mind during the attack. As a result, the NCR application was thrown out to the relief of family and friends of the victim.
It is a big closure, but, you know, she's gone. But it is a big closure.
And then he was convicted of second-degree murder, giving him a life sentence with no parole for at least 18 years.
Well, Jen, there were a number of family and friends of Nadine Scow in the courtroom today. She was 38 years old when her ex-boyfriend, Silva Coshwell, came to her downtown apartment and stabbed her 101 times. His crime didn't end when Scow died. He continued what the judge called, quote, a savage and brutal attack by disemboweling and disfiguring the victim. Coshwell turned himself in to police and admitted to killing Scow. His lawyer argued Coshwell was not criminally responsible for the act, but the judge disagreed, finding him guilty of second-degree murder. Now, that comes with an automatic life sentence, but this morning in front of Scow's family and friends, the justice determined Coshwell won't be eligible for parole for 18 years, less four for time already served.
Now, if he does get parole, he will be automatically deported, which is something that I'm going to get to in a second here, so just put a pin in that. So 16 victim impact statements were read, all basically telling the court that Nadine was a caring and loving person who contributed to her community, and that her loss was like a loss to many, many people. And Justice Sanderman responded to all of the statements that had been read, telling her parents, Helen and Harvey, "We've seen how much your daughter meant to those who truly knew her. In the future, you should celebrate her life and the positive effect that it's had on so many rather than dwelling upon her horrific death. Take comfort in the fact that you and your husband raised her well and she lived a good life." And I actually think it's really nice when a justice or a judge recognizes the loss to a family and doesn't just kind of see it as, you know, kind of like their job where it's just another sentence that they have to give out, like sees the human side of the cases that they come across. Outside the courtroom, all Harvey could say was, "We loved her. We miss her." So now the part that I said to put a pin in. So it turns out that Silva had been given what's called a stay of removal order. Like, he was going to be removed from Canada, as in deported. Now, this was back before he brutally murdered Nadine. But that this whole removal order was basically called off. And this was back in 2010. So he was going to be removed from Canada because he had been convicted of sexual assault. Now, CBC did a little digging into Silva's background and came up with some pretty interesting facts. They found some court records that Silva had pled guilty to sexual assault back in September of 2006 and had been given 9 months of probation. And apparently this was considered a minor thing to Canada Border Services, who didn't even know about Silva until March of 2010, when he pled guilty again to sexual assault of another woman. Now, in that case, he had apparently grabbed her ass while he was drunk and was given a 70-day jail sentence. And he was also supposed to provide a DNA sample to the court, which he either refused to do or he didn't do it. So he got himself another 30 days in jail on top of that. So immigration was all set to deport him because, like, sexual assault's kind of a crime. And it's also a breach of the conditions that were put on him by the Immigration and Refugee Board. But he appealed the removal order. Now, and that's fine. Like, he's allowed to appeal it. And based on the fact that he not just breached the immigration orders, but he also had not given this DNA sample and he'd been arrested on an outstanding warrant, it didn't seem very likely that this appeal was going to be granted. But at this immigration appeal division hearing, it's called, there was a joint recommendation for a 2-year stay of his deportation order, which was granted because he had strong family and community support and a stable work history. So then it was stayed for another 2 more years, even though during that whole time, those 2 years, he breached his conditions again. That the appeal board had set by not applying for a Sudanese passport and failing to enroll in English as a second language training. So, but these breaches were considered minor, so he was given another chance, another 2-year extension of the stay, which would have been till 2016. And if he had met all the conditions by then, he would be able to stay permanently. But he broke those conditions again by murdering Nadine, and now faces automatic deportation at the end of his sentence here, which is a life sentence. But what will happen is that they will likely grant him parole in the next, probably in the next year or so, and then he'll be deported at that time into the custody of Sudanese authorities to do with as they please. Now, before I go, I just want to circle back to this not calling the police thing again. And yes, I realize I'm harping on it. Nadine's mom, Helen, says she's trying really hard not to be angry at Brooke and her neighbors, but, quote, "I try not to, but yeah, there is anger, not only at him, but all the people that didn't call the police. I'm just as angry at them, just as angry at them. In this world, you have to step in. Dialing 911 does not put you in the middle of anything." And I 100% agree with that. Please, if you hear something or see something, please call the police. Now, in memory of Nadine, her family asked that any donations be made to the Edmonton Police Victim Services Unit. And that was the horrible, terrifying murder of Nadine Scow. And I am going to be back again next week with another case. I appreciate you listening or watching wherever you listen or you watch. And please do your rate review thing, subscribe, follow the show. And you can also sign up for the exclusive content on Red Circle or in the link that is below in the podcast. And I'll see you here next week. Thank you so much.